The U.S. Constitution and some long-held prisoners are caught in the balance in a struggle to define freedom and security this week. In Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, dozens of the 166 War on Terror captives being held under various legal protocols are on hunger strikes in protest of the conditions at the facility. Our partner, the New York Times, ran an op-ed piece written by one of those prisoners who described the conditions as unbearable. He's been held at the facility for 11 years and 3 months, never charged with a crime, never receiving a trial. And since the hunger strike began, he's lost 30 pounds. Over the weekend, the facility was put on lockdown in anticipation of prisoner violence. Earlier today, our friend and longtime correspondent for the Miami Herald, Carol Rosenberg, gave us this report from Gitmo, a place as tense as she has ever seen it.
At this stage, the Guantanamo prison is under lockdown. The whole idea of communal, where the captives get to eat together, pray together, play soccer together, is over. Any idea that people are being allowed to commune is finished. We basically went to the prison yesterday and saw one by one each of the captives who have been held without charge for 12 years or so in individual cells in the most austere conditions. Only a blanket, mat, prayer beads, prayer rugs, and these empty, empty steel cells. This is a completely different Guantanamo than a month ago or for years. They've now gone back to the maximum security lockdown, and what you see are prisoners inside their cells with next to nothing, pacing back and forth or just lying around.
Miami Herald reporter Carol Rosenberg in Gitmo. The hunger strike seems like a meager weapon to use in a maximum security prison where guards are armed, the location is isolated, and individual prisoners are essentially facing down an entire government. But Mahatma Gandhi faced down the British Empire to help achieve independence for colonial India.
I regard myself as a soldier, though a soldier of peace. I know the value of discipline and truth. I must ask you to believe me when I say that I have never made a statement of this description, that the masses of India, if it became necessary, would resort to violence. I regard myself as incapable in my lucid moments of making a statement of this character. It is complete independence that we want.
In Northern Ireland in 1980, 10 young men died during a hunger strike that Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher refused to negotiate over.
The men of violence have chosen in recent months to play what may well be their last card. They've turned their violence against themselves through the prison hunger strike to death.
But the history of hunger strikes stretches much farther back in time. Here to explore the history of the hunger strike as a political weapon is Sharman Apt Russell, professor of writing at Western New Mexico State University. Professor Russell, welcome.
Hello.
Professor Russell, what is the track record of the hunger strike as a political weapon down through history, say the last 100 years?
Well, you know, we really had a renaissance of hunger strikes in the 20th century. The English suffragettes are credited with reviving that. And it was pretty successful for getting attention to what they were doing. They were kind of a dramatic bunch, and this really amplified, you know, their protest and their interest. And the American suffragists went on and used the same tactic, and the Irish nationalist went on and used that tactic. Later, of course, as we've heard, Gandhi and other political activists. So, I mean, we've had an incredible number of hunger strikes throughout the 20th century and into the 21st.
Why do they work if they do, and when do they not work?
I mean, I feel hunger strikes are really potent because, in part, they're so primal. It humanizes the hunger striker, and it personalizes the subject. And suddenly you see this frail human body pitted against, you know, the might of an institution or of a government. It's a David and Goliath story. And we all relate to hunger. But then we look at the cause, and we then can evaluate and judge the cause of the hunger striker. And the media now can help us do that, can really explore an issue.
Whatever you may think about the war on terror or the use of Guantanamo Bay, would you say, based on your reading of history, that this is, on some level, an ideal setting for something like this to happen, that the issues that are in play at Gitmo really echo the issues that have worked for hunger strikers down through history?
Yes, I really would. In part because I think the audience, the third party, the people watching the hunger strike, are really ready to explore this issue too. You know, with the suffragettes, if the woman had struck for votes 50 years later, who knows if that would have been successful. So in part, I think the culture, the time has to be right to be ready to look at what the hunger strikers are illuminating with their sacrifice and with their heroism to some extent. They are willing to die. They are willing to put their life on the line. And in this case, we, the public, American people, and probably the world, is ready to look at what's going on in that situation.
Would you say that martyrdom is an essential component of the hunger strike as a political weapon, or does it not need to get that far?
Well, it doesn't need to get that far, but it can get that far. It's a real risk. It's a real danger to the hunger striker, and it has to be. And I think we all hope it doesn't get that far. But the truth is that whatever change you're asking for from a government or an institution or a prison official might not happen in time. You know, that time frame might not fit the frame of the human body that is dying, that is cannibalizing itself for lack of food. Sometimes it does. You know, sometimes your demands can be met, or some good faith effort can be made, and the hunger striker can legitimately end his or her strike. But sometimes not. You can't predict that.
And technology today, does it allow for people to forcibly have their hunger strike ended?
Well, it does. And there have been cases of people, you know, sedated and fed intravenously for a long time. And I know now the hunger strikers are being forcibly fed. But that's a very violent and degrading experience. And that was true even with the suffragettes. You know, it was a kind of rape. It's really not an easy thing to take food and insert it in someone's body against his or her will.
Sharman Abdrussel is professor of writing at Western New Mexico State University. Thanks so much.
Oh, you're welcome.
The Takeaway is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and the Henry Luce Foundation for increased understanding of East and Southeast Asia, and the Rockefeller Foundation, whose transportation initiative is promoting equitable and sustainable development in communities across the country. More at rockfound.org.
Come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at the New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.